at the party, Richter!
Hello, and welcome to See You at the Party, Richter. I am Joseph Beck Castro. With me, as always, is Chris Chapman.
Guten Tag.
And Aaron Frescas.
Hello.
All right. We're multi-language here. For this episode, we're going to be doing something special and something we haven't done before because nothing like this has existed before. We're going to be covering Arnold's Netflix show, FUBAR. But for this episode, it's going to be the first four episodes. So this episode of the podcast is going to be the first four episodes of the show. It's eight episodes long. And if you want to know, it's a 2023 action comedy vehicle with Arnold. Chris has been kind enough to write us an outline, a summary, and we're going to go over it. So,
okay. So yeah, before Chris gets into the the summary part of it, I've just got a tiny bit of quick production info. So the first episode was directed by Phil Abraham, but the episode was written by Nick Santora, who is also credited as the show's creator. Mm-hmm. So he also wrote a handful of episodes of the show Prison Break, as well as the 2008 movie Punisher Warzone starring Ray Stevenson, which, like I said, is actually quite enjoyable. It's like a nice a middle ground between like the Thomas Jane one and then the way more serious.
You're talking about the serious, the Netflix show?
Yeah, the Netflix one. More comic booky than both of them.
Okay, gotcha.
And then the first four episodes also have Lillian Wang, Michael J. Gutierrez, and Kate Duffy listed as staff writers. The show was produced by Skydance, which is the same production company that made the last two Terminator movies. And I only mention that because I was curious how exactly Nick Santora became involved with the show. Like, I was curious if maybe Arnold handpicked him or something like that. But apparently, according to a Variety article that I found, it seems like part of the reason he was chosen was because he actually already had a development deal in place with Skydance.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, I believe he's...
Is Skydance, like, somebody's production company? The way, like, Scott Free is, like, Ridley Scott's production company?
I think the guy's name is, like, David Ellison or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's who...
Founded by David Ellison in 2010. Oh.
Yeah, it's not very old.
Yeah, it's newer than I thought it was.
Yeah.
It's weird, because on my Google search, the first thing that pulls up is it's founded in 2010. And then kind of on the side here, it says... Skydance Media is an American production company founded by David Ellison in 2006.
What was it doing before?
I don't know.
Okay.
Weird. Anyway.
So, I believe he's actually, I'm pretty sure, is the showrunner for Reacher on Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay.
Which was part of his deal with Skydance.
I've heard good things, but I've only seen like one episode.
Was it any good?
It was decent. It was fine.
Okay. I've only seen the movie.
The movie was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah.
That's it for the credits, I guess, for this episode.
All right. So, in case you've never heard of this show, FUBAR is starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm going to run through the cast real quick because character names get a little confusing later. But the main characters are Arnold as Luke Bruner. We have Monica Barbaro as Emma Bruner. I have no idea. I don't think I've ever seen her in anything, but
she, I'm pretty sure like a lot of the reviews mentioned that she was in the new Top Gun movie.
Oh, okay.
Apparently she's really good in it, but I haven't seen
it. Oh, she might be one of the pilots. She was
Lieutenant Natasha.
Yeah, if she's one of the pilots, I vaguely remember her. I saw the movie once.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, let's see. Barry, who is Arnold's best friend in the show, is played by Milan Carter, which, again, I've never heard of him. I don't think I've seen him in anything, but I really like him. I think he's pretty funny in the show.
Yeah. Apparently he's in Dolomite is my name. And he doesn't have very many credits, but he's in
that. I wanted to watch that movie and I never got around to it.
I don't remember him in that, but I haven't seen it in a while.
Then we have the rest of Arnold's team. Fortune Feimster. Feimster, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Fortune Feimster is Rue, who is one of the field agents. And she's like a super genius in the show, I guess.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, like they have her do science-y stuff every once in a while. And then there's Alden, who is played by Travis Van Winkle, who I don't know anything about him.
He was in, the only thing I know him from is he is in, I think it was like 2009 or something like that, the Friday the 13th like reboot or whatever.
Okay, gotcha.
It's the only thing I know him from.
So that covers the main spy team, and then the main villain is Gabriel Luna as Boro Polonia. And Gabriel Luna, you will remember, is the polite Terminator from Terminator Dark Fate.
Yeah, he's also in The Last of Us.
Yeah, he plays Tommy in The Last of Us very recently. And that's the main cast. Like, there's some supporting people, but I really don't recognize, like, a lot of people.
They're not important.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
All right. Let's see. So, episode one, we begin in Belgium meeting Luke Bruner, a seasoned CIA operative finishing up his last job before retirement. We see him kicking all sorts of ass and also meet Barry, who acts as his handler and is his best friend.
Sorry, real quick. The summaries are going to be super brief on Chris's part. We're not going through every scene.
Yeah, we're doing four episodes, so there's no way I'm going through every scene.
Okay, cool. So I have a couple things about the
opening scene.
Yeah. First of all, he's 65 years old, and he's actually 76, which I thought was interesting. Hmm. They just aged him down a little bit. Secondly, the beating on the diamonds confused me when I watched it, because so he goes in and he's like...
I had to turn the subtitles on because I was very confused about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I looked it up. According to WPDiamonds.com, quote, diamonds are not wettable. So, like, beads of water on a candle, these gems like to resist water, which, why does it happen? Unbonded carbon atoms on the surface like to bind to grease-based things. This is why diamonds get dirty. They love greasy things, so be sure to clean them. Therefore, there are few bonds left for water to attract.
Gotcha. So, wait. So a cut diamond would like get wet, like the water wouldn't bead?
Okay, so basically like oil and water, you know, they don't mix.
Yeah, exactly. I was just confused by the scene because I was like, okay, so first I thought like he thought the diamonds were fake because there were beads of water on them.
Yeah, but he doesn't think they're fake. It's just,
well, I think he noticed the beads, which that's some good diamonding right there. Dealing with a lot of diamonds. Sorry. This was bugging me because I was like, wait, what the fuck? And then he noticed it when he smelled them because he smelled the plastic residue.
Yeah, exactly. He smelled the whatever he used to blow the vault.
Yeah.
I like that scene. I think that the cyanide stuff is fun, where he's like, he has a cyanide capsule and he's like, basically he tells the guy, well, this is cyanide, so I can kill myself. He takes it and then he's like, oh, wait, I took the antidote, and then he just kicks everybody's ass and shoots everybody.
Yeah.
But anyway, they go home and meet Emma, his daughter. We learn that Emma is practically perfect in basically every way. She's a straight A overachiever who went on to become a globetrotting philanthropist. Luke's only problem with Emma is her choice in men, specifically Jay Baruchel. Also, Luke's shitty disappointment of a son is there. Anyway, Luke is clearly still in love with his ex-wife, Tally, and plans to get her back with a yacht from the CIA now that he's retiring.
So real quick at the birthday party, his wife looked familiar.
I don't recognize her from anything.
I looked it up, and that's a lot of vagina from Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And then Jay Baruchel pretty much playing the same role as usual, but...
Yeah, he's playing Jay Baruchel.
Yeah, exactly. And then there was one of the lines that I liked in that scene was, those panties don't finger themselves.
Yeah, because he's a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah. And then that like father daughter intro scene is like, upon the third rewatch, is just corny.
I don't think that's so bad. I think she's doing a decent job in that. Like,
yeah,
the problem is that, you know, she's a spy, so it seems like she's being fake. If that was an actual reveal, I think that scene would come off a lot better.
But it just becomes obvious that the dialogue's forced, because like, he somehow thinks like his dialogue on there is forced because he's like naming up.
I think all the dialogue's forced.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that's what acting is.
I know, but yeah, like there's subtle ways to do it. And this show's not great at it.
Yeah. I don't like most of the dialogue in this show.
But so I had no idea what the show was about when I started watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't watch anything on it, and I probably wouldn't have picked up that she was a spy, except for the name of the fucking episode, Take Your Daughter to Work Day.
Which you pointed out when we were watching it.
Yeah, as soon as they get to the camp where the other Terminator is running.
The Tia, or Tia. Yeah,
the polite Terminator, that's what I call it.
And they're like, oh, you know, he's the best or whatever. I'm like, oh, that's his fucking daughter. Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah. So Luke is clearly still in love with his ex-wife. He's going to get her back now that he got a yacht from the CIA, despite the fact that she is in a relationship with one of the Ninja Turtles. At his retirement party.
Wait, is that a Ninja Turtle?
His name is Donatello.
His name is Donatello.
Oh, okay. God, slow. Jesus.
So we're at his retirement party, and we are introduced to the rest of Luke's team. I have no idea. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's even a little old to be even one of the original Ninja Turtles.
Like, wait, was he one of the Ninja Turtles?
We meet the rest of Luke's team, Alden and Rue, before Luke gets pulled into one last job, which is saving an embedded agent from an international terrorist named Boro that he helped to create, while also stealing Boro's WMD, which is like a handheld nuke.
Fortune Feimster,
yeah.
Yeah. And then Travis Von Winkle, they're pretty much, if this is a unofficial True Lies sequel, which
it sort of is,
they're pretty much filling the Tom Arnold role.
Basically, unfortunately, they tripled the Tom Arnold role. So, like, yeah, I don't know.
I don't mind it.
I mean, I'll talk about it later. I like all of them individually. It's just too much for me.
And then another line that I liked is, I even waited for him to get off the compound before I threw his dad off a cliff.
That is funny. Let's see. So Luke heads down to Boro's base in Guyana.
I want a compound. I
mentioned it. Where he is greeted as an old friend because he basically, one of his undercover aliases was a friend of Boro's dad. And so he's known him his whole life. While they tour the base, Luke is introduced to the embedded agent, who turns out to be Emma, his daughter. Revealed to be pretty much the opposite of how her father sees her. He is introduced to her in the middle of a fucking, like, prize fight as she is smoking and beating the shit out of somebody and cursing and smoking.
Which, again, I told Joe and I told Erica this again when we rewatched it, but that reveal that it was his daughter would have had no impact if I hadn't known what the show was about. Because, like, I wouldn't have known it was the same actress. I would have been like,
who wouldn't have recognized her?
No, I was like, who is that? That's like,
that's fair. She's only been in one scene for like 3 minutes. So
exactly. Yeah. And yeah. it doesn't maybe have any like distinctive.
She does look different. Like she's got her hair up and stuff. And yeah.
Yeah.
So Barry then reveals that he knew about Emma and that the CIA has been keeping the Bruners totally separate for the whole for her whole career. Later, Boro holds a big party to honor Luke and also to murder his accountant. Even later that night, Luke and Emma kill some of Boro's men. Emma does so as a complete fucking maniac. She like hides inside a cow and then and then stabs a dude who comes up to look at it. But anyway, they do that so that they can intercept the guy who's going to rat out Emma. And they are fighting and arguing the entire time. As the Bruners plan to steal the nuke the next morning and continue to fight, Boro shows up furious and his dead men are found, proving that Luke and Emma are traitors, so they make a run for it. The Bruners steal the nuke and help smuggle a family out of Boro's operation. After surviving an absolutely insane car crash, the Bruners arrive to the airstrip to find that their ride is late, but Boro is not. And he surrounds them with all his gunmen, and that's where episode one ends.
The line that caught me in that was Barry's Lilo and Stitch line. What? Just cracked me up.
That's stupid. I like what Fortune Feimster says right after that.
With
I didn't write down the line. Yeah, she says something lewd and says, I think that's from Frozen.
Yeah, I think he says, kiss my ass. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, episode two.
Okay, before we get into episode two, just a quick... credits again, like the production credits. So this episode was directed by Holly Dale, who I was looking up has a ton of television directing credits, like mostly primetime shows though. But she's directed everything from Law and Order to NCIS to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to Castle, just a lot of cop procedural shows.
Yeah.
And then it was written by Scott Sullivan, who it looks like Nick Santora brought over from Reacher, because he's also wrote like a few episodes of that, but he wrote a bunch of episodes of a show called Scorpion, which I believe was also developed by Nick Santora, and I've never heard of it before.
I've heard of it. I never watched it. It's very much like
it had a ton of episodes. I think there was like 90 or something. It's on 90 episodes. Jesus, or something really? Like that. Yeah, I think so. Like I've never heard of that show before. God, I think it was a CBS show.
All these network shows get made, and they have so many more seasons than I think they do.
Eccentric genius forms an international network of super geniuses to act.
Okay, never mind.
that's just a funny eccentric genius forms an international network of super geniuses to act as a last line of defense against the complicated threats of the modern world.
There's a lot of subcategories of genius.
Yeah, so it's that one has 93 episodes. It was on from 2014 to 2018.
Wow.
I've never heard of this show before. Okay, anyway. So he wrote a bunch of episodes of that. But yeah, that's it for the...
Episode 2 production stuff.
Episode 2, yeah. Director, writer credits. So let's get into this business.
Episode 2 picks up at exactly the same moment. So as Boro's men held everyone at gunpoint, Luke tells Boro the story of how he killed Boro's father to buy some time until the cavalry arrives in the form of Barry, Alden, and Rue in a helicopter.
I kind of dig Gabriel Luna in the role, like even though if it's a bit over
he's
the
doing
top.
Good. Yeah, but it's like, I don't know, he's playing a good like megalomaniac. I like it.
For sure.
Yeah.
And especially because I've only seen him in Terminator movie, which he's a Terminator, so there's no
exactly.
Emotion.
Yeah.
And then Last of Us, which he's mm-hmm. Tommy, so he's very like low-key, and he's not really in it too much.
Yeah, he's not in it a ton, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So, this is a different thing than I've seen him in it. And it's, yeah.
I like it. You know, it is over the top, but it's supposed to be over the top, so.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Back at HQ, the CIA informs Luke and Emma that they have to finish the Boro case together, to the chagrin of both father and daughter. Luke forces Barry to begin surveillance on Donnie, the dude banging his ex-wife. We see Emma hanging out with Jay Baruchel to drive home that he's a lovable dork and that being a spy makes relationships hard.
So, real quick, the director's big-ass scar across her face just kind of makes, like, feels like a callback to Charlton Heston's eye patch.
I don't want to look dumb, but I literally did not know she had a scar.
She has a big ass scar, like a Joker scar, like across, really? On the left side of her face.
Holy shit.
It looks like if you have a gaming headset, it looks like
the yes, mic. It does look like the mic.
So maybe like you didn't notice that because you thought she had like a microphone on.
Oh man, I feel really stupid.
She has a big scar, and it just, it made it feel like a Charlton Heston thing, just because he has that eye patch in True Lies.
Yeah, but I feel like Charlton Heston was just supposed to be Nick Fury in that movie, so I don't know.
Yeah, true. And then first of all, with the Donnie thing, you'd think they would avoid the whole spying on the ex-wife plot, or spying on the wife plot, considering it's a pretty big plot point for True Lies?
I guess, but they, yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but they are specifically spying on, like, he's not spying on Tally. He's only spying on Donatello.
Yeah, it is
the same thing. It's basically just Bill Paxton, but yeah.
Yes, this is already going to get, like, compared to it.
Yeah.
And then, like, the couple of lines that I liked were, he's paying for Cinemax. I knew he was a poet.
I have that as one of my favorite lines. It's a good line and it's a good delivery. I knew he was a pervert.
And then he's cuckolding the whole family.
That is number two on things I like about this series, which is just hearing Arnold repeatedly pronounce cuckolding as cock-holding.
And then I was looking through Donnie's IMDb, and I wasn't sure what I knew him from, but he apparently was in Jurassic World, which I don't remember him in. Like,
was he the dad in the first
that's
one?
The only thing I can think
yeah,
of.
Yeah, I don't know. I know I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, but yeah. Next, we go to a briefing room scene to show us that it actually is a good idea to force the Bruners to work together. We also introduce Barry's romantic interest, Tina, and we also introduce a wacky but surprisingly effective psychologist to solve all the daddy-daughter issues. Luke and Barry crash Tally's family dinner to put a tracker on Donnie's car. Also, Luke's good-for-nothing shitbag of a son is there. Next day, we find out Boro is going to steal some radioactive waste from a bullet train to make a new bomb, so the Bruners will be on board to stop him. Sorry. I just really like that we don't pay any attention to his son. Like, the entire story is about Emma. And even though his life was probably also irreparably fucked up by Arnold being a spy, they're just like, yeah, but he turned out to be a piece of shit. So, like, we don't care.
Look at him. He's trying to get you to,
Yeah.
Exactly. He's trying to borrow money? Come on.
No, he's trying to get investments for his app. Because those things are expensive.
That's going to fail. Yeah, exactly. That scene also has one of the weaker, like, writing tropes that I'm not a fan of, when Arnold can't admit that he's like there because he wants to see his ex because he's stubborn or like a man or whatever.
Yeah, like I fully agree that it's a trope. I just think that in my opinion, the best acted scenes by Arnold are the ones where he actually gets to be sincere with either Tali or Emma.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that scene, especially since it sets up a slightly better scene later on.
It does set up the better scene. That's true. Just the whole, like, I'd rather do the opposite of what I want than admit my feelings sort of thing. Exactly. It's just, Anyway.
It's a little played out, but yeah. So now we are going to the train. So instead of stopping the train, Boro's men actually try to perform a daring helicopter heist while the train is moving, made possible mostly by Luke not fully trusting Emma's instincts. He doesn't trust her instincts because she calls out specifically the guy who she thinks is working for Boro, and he kind of agrees with her, but he still is like, no, you gotta wait. Like, you gotta let's play it cool.
Her instinct is to go, let's go fuck him up. I'm like, you're in the middle of a train. like there's a bunch of people around. Like, no, seriously, the worst secret agents.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely should not have done it immediately, but I think Arnold also should have, like, I don't know, I think it was the right thing to do to eventually go over there and stop him, or to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Like, Arnold's sitting there, like, distracting her by trying to talk to her about their relationship. But anyway, so Luke and Emma speed up the train to stop the heist by forcing the helicopter to disconnect. But then they can't slow it down normally because Luke screwed up when he was trying to do a little Donnie surveillance. So now the train is going to crash into the station and basically irradiate the whole town. And that is the end of episode 2.
So her boyfriend calls her mom in the middle of this to complain.
Yeah, basically what happens is Jay Baruchel, they were supposed to go to Antiques Roadshow together. And she has to not go because of the mission. He is kind of bummed out about it, especially since it doesn't go his way when he's there. And then her mom basically texts them and says, like, urgent, urgent, please call me.
Yes.
And then she calls her and she's like, man, Jay Baruchel is really down in the dumps. And she's like, you call this a fucking emergency? So, because it's right in the middle of when the train's going to crash. So,
on top of that, it was just like, her, you called her mom? Come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They didn't. I mean, he must have, but they didn't show.
They didn't show what he did, but he definitely called her. Especially because, like, later we see what happens when he proposes, too. So, he definitely called her, which is just. I don't know. I'm also not close to anybody, so maybe that's. I was like, oh, what are you trying to be close to their parents? Ugh. Jesus.
Like, you've killed Chris.
I'm like, what a pussy. Trying to. I'm just like, oh.
Sorry. Fuck. I probably shouldn't laugh that loud at my brother's emotional isolation, but that was hilarious.
Oh, my God.
The one thing I'll say is I agree that they are clearly writing him in a way that doesn't always make sense because they clearly need her to break up with him by the end of the series.
Yes.
So that kind of bothers me. However, I don't really, I think what he is just a nice counterpoint to their family.
Yes.
In that he communicates, is like a sweet person.
What does that say about me? I'm like...
That's why I was laughing so hard earlier.
That's more my issues than the show.
Again, why I was laughing so hard earlier.
What are you trying to, like, talk to your family?
Yeah, you recognize the differences, but you clearly are, like, on the wrong side of it.
I'm just pretty much being Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, just reminds me of, like, when we were talking about, I think you were there, when we were talking about a family member who's close to their family.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, my sister was there who lives across the country.
Yeah.
So she's visiting And one of her family members is there, and her family's very close.
Uh-huh.
And after they leave, we're all at my mom's house, and we just start ripping on the family for being close. Like, all three of us, like, what a bunch of fucking freaks. Like, what are they, talking and hugging and stuff like that? Like, did you see one of them sitting near their lap? That's fucking weird. Would you just, ugh. Like, what a bunch of, and then I think I pointed out, I'm like, how sad is this that we're like, I don't know if my mom was sitting there, but I know it was the three of us just like being like, oh, a bunch of fucking weirdos. Like, okay. Just like,
while I do think you are slightly emotionally stunted, also that family, that part of the family is fucking weird.
Yes.
So you're not
but
wrong.
But still, it was just funny because like, just had a moment of like, how sad is this? And we like,
that, yeah, that we all, can't all handle us, like love. Yeah.
Any sort of love to it was like, ugh.
Yeah.
God. Fucking weirdos. Also, the line when they're spinning up the train, and Fortune pretty much has all the good lines.
Yeah, pretty
but
much.
When she says, sounds like Donnie boy's going on a tally rally, just crack me up.
Yeah. It's right after they find out he took 4 Viagra, and then that's what she says. And it's
and then it's something about funny. His pants too, like they said something, and he's like,
she has
kind of like Donnie's chinos or something like that.
Yeah, she has a few good lines
yeah
when they're talking about Donnie banging his ex-wife,
but that's my anyway.
Yeah,
before we get going with episode 3, a little more production stuff. This episode was also directed by Holly Dale, who directed the last one. Mm. And then it was written by Adam Higgs, who is actually also credited with helping develop Orphan Black, which I've never seen, but I heard was good.
Yeah, same. I know.
Is that
I know
the one that's supposed to be like Lost?
Like Lost? Lost-ish? No, that's the one where, what's her name from She-Hulk? Tatiana Maslany. That's like her breakout role where she plays like 13 different people or something.
Is it the one that's supposed to be like a not an anthology, but like
it's like a I think a sci-fi premise where she's got like multiple personalities.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I've never seen it. I heard it was good though.
I've only heard good things, but yeah.
That's it for the writer direct credits, so cool. Go ahead with that episode.
Cool.
Or with this episode, I guess. Mm-hmm. Episode 3, go.
Got it. So now we're on to episode 3. We're still on the train. Everything is going to crash. Basically, they solve it. So now they have to pump nuclear waste into the train's drive system for science reasons.
Which, if you just pump some hot in there, that's what Donnie was thinking.
Yeah, that's probably where that came in. So Luke helps Emma climb out on top of the train using the magnetic vests that they got from their therapists. They have a little fight, and she finally convinces him to let her go. She grabs the tube to transfer the waste, slow down the train, and save the day.
Okay, the writing for this scene makes me appreciate the subtlety, and I use that with quotes, subtlety of James Cameron's writing.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's very like, you gotta let me go.
Yeah.
But I don't want to let you go, but you gotta eventually. I'm like, oh my God. Like,
literally and metaphorically, exactly. You must let
show me. It. Don't you? Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah, they save the day. Emma makes Luke stop the surveillance of Donnie and then tries to smooth over some relationship issues with Jay Baruchel. Then the show begins to set up a romance between Emma and Alden.
Yeah, which was weird.
Yeah. Luke has a little heart-to-heart with Tally. Basically, he shows up at the house again when it's just the two of them and they kind of have a nice conversation. We see Boro torturing the man that Luke smuggled out of Guyana for some very vague details about Emma, including her first name and the fact that she plays violin.
I love how Gabriel Luna is putting his, like the character's putting his PowerPoint skills to use when he's like clicks on the next slide and adds two boxes next to
his very basic PowerPoint skills.
Exactly. It's like just the word Emma and then a picture of a violin.
It's literally just like, it's just white font on a black background. It says Emma. And he's like, this is all we have to go on.
I just can imagine him like doing the PowerPoint. Like,
yeah.
He's like, that looks okay. All he is Emma. He's like, I don't know what she looks like. And just put an image like playing with the fonts for like half an hour, like I would. Like,
could I get a star fade in on that violin shot? No, not star. Let's go slow fade. I don't know. What are the options?
You gotta have them take you seriously. Come on.
And I was wondering if he like, should I put a Stradivarius in there? Like, will these fuckers even recognize that there's a Stradivarius in there? Like, or should I just put a regular violin? I could probably
put a fucking fiddle in there and they wouldn't know it.
Also, the picture of young Arnold with the kid, like young, it was obviously like a 90s Arnold.
Yeah, it was 90s Arnold with a kid. Yeah.
I was going to say they should have used the picture of Arnold's real kid with like that he had with the nanny, but that was just what it looked like, like miniature Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. Because that kid looks exactly like him.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering, like, is that just Photoshopped or is that like a picture of a real fan? I don't know.
It's probably Photoshopped.
Yeah. That's what I figured. But they showed a picture of... Gabriel, I keep wanting to say Diego Luna.
Yeah.
Just because they have the same last name. And yeah. I wrote it once and I was like, I don't think that's the right thing. But no. Of Gabriel Luna when he was a kid early, I was curious if that was actually a picture of him photoshopped with a different actor. But I didn't actually look because I'm lazy. Anyway.
Let's see. Then he sets a room full of, as Aaron was saying, he sets a room full of hackers to find the real identity of both Luke and Emma. Luke and his crew celebrate their victory on his new yacht, where Rue starts trying to help Barry hook up with Tina.
The Tally-ho.
Yeah, the Tally-ho, which they inform him is probably a bad name if he's trying to get back with Tally.
Yeah.
Tina gets a lead on Boro's next move, so the celebration is cut short to go find a missing nuclear scientist. Just a reminder, Tina is an NSA agent who is, again, the only reason I care is that she's Barry's love interest, because that's a storyline.
Yeah, she got introduced in the, before they went.
I mentioned her earlier, I just didn't mention her name. Yeah.
And how timid Tina, the NSA girl, is also sort of bugged me, just because it's another trope to, like, the timid smart girl.
Mm-hmm.
They constantly bring it to attention.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, definitely.
Just the way they write the characters is very.
Yeah, I mean, she's got tropey, one character. Yeah, but it's also one dimensional. She's got one characteristic. That's it.
Yeah,
she's timid. Shy. Yeah. That's it. So they're looking for. They're trying to find a missing nuclear scientist. Then we see Emma talking to Jay Baruchel about the future and having kids. During which Baruchel turns weirdly old-fashioned so that Emma will have an excuse to dump him and go out with the hot spy. Let's see. Then we get another briefing for the next mission, which is to break into a facility to steal the missing scientist's research so that they can find out what else Boro needs for his bomb. And I didn't realize how overcomplicated this part of the plot was until I had to write it down. And I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, first off, you see that Arnold was spying on so he knows about the kid thing.
Oh, he was going to pick up Emma, and he like eavesdropped on them as they were having the conversation.
Yeah. I only mentioned that because Arnold saying nerd was great.
Yeah.
What do you want to do with that nerd? It just reminded me of
my son is a nerd.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you guys are complaining about how it's simplistic so much stuff is, and then you're also complaining about how overcomplicated this plot is to get
it's not simplistic.
Yeah, characters need to be multidimensional to be interesting. Yes,
that part of the plot is overly complicated. What is it?
Am super enjoying the show, so I didn't notice this stuff. I didn't notice this stuff until the second time watching it. Like the first time watching it, I've been watching with Erica. The first time watching this has been super fun. Like, I've been watching it, I've been super interested in it. Like, I enjoy all the characters. I'm starting to notice a little bit of stuff about Arnold, like just like complaining about the daughter stuff a lot is getting a little like a tired joke. But otherwise, I'm enjoying the show so far. It's just like the second time through, I was like noticing like stuff as far as character development. And it's only character development. Like, I'm enjoying the rest of the stuff.
And I would say that this is the only part of the plot that I felt was overcomplicated. This particular mission, which not that they do a bad job explaining it, but it is a lot of... like, the first time I watched this, I didn't really understand what the point of the mission was. I was just like, okay, they're going and they need to steal some data from this guy. And that's good enough for me. But when I actually try to parse out, like, exactly what they're doing, I was like, oh, they crammed a lot into this one episode as far as the plot goes.
They have a ton of briefing scenes. Like, they this do. Has to be and what, like, the fifth or sixth one in the three episodes? And
yeah, I think
it's a super effective way to do it, like an exposition dump.
Yeah.
But that's one of my notes. But then also that Pooh Bear scene with Travis Van Winkle, like, like I was telling Chris before, he plays just like a great, charming douchebag.
He's so good at it. Yeah.
I love those two Tom Arnold split characters.
Yeah.
That's what office jobs are like a lot of fucking meetings. So
yeah. So the plan to get this information that they need is that Alden will seduce a Moldovan bureaucrat to get access to the research files. Emma is kind of grossed out by the honeypot concept and debates Alden about it a little bit.
Which is weird considering she's done it before. Like, has which she? We find out later. Yes, we find out. She says later that she's done it before.
She says that she's had to get close to people, but she has never so much as kissed anybody in order to do her job.
Are you sure?
She says to him, she has never so much as kissed anybody since she's been with Carter.
Yeah. Yes, since she's been, but she's done that before. She kind of hints that she's
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
So like that's why it was weird that she's giving him, or she was like, wait, what's going on? But a lot of this would work better if she was a new agent. Because you're explaining stuff and explaining stuff and explaining stuff to where she should know all this shit already. There's another scene that's coming up to where you're like, why are they explaining it to her? Which I know because they're explaining it to us.
Yeah. But that's true. That would make a little more sense.
This works a lot better if it's a new agent. This isn't something that you need to explain to someone that's been there for, 8 years?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So, later that night when they arrive, as Alden and Emma wait in a bar for the target, it becomes apparent the target is, in fact, a straight man, and it's Emma who will have to pull off the honeypot, despite Luke's objections. Alden helps Emma get ready to seduce and eases her guilt, kind of, about possibly cheating on Jay Baruchel, further laying the groundwork for a possible partner swap.
With her giving him shit when they were on the plane about being like a chauvinistic D-bag,
mm-hmm.
The scene is just written to where it's always like those two characters end up hooking up. So like,
yeah, of course.
It's usually like while they're yelling at each other before saying, are you as turned on as I am? More. And then they start like making out.
Yeah, it's the rom-com like thing. They have to start out disliking each other and that's how you know they're going to end up together.
But what if they don't?
It's a possibility. We haven't finished the series. I would be interested in that. I hope it makes that turn. But
yeah, so do I. Like, I kind of hope that they figure stuff out with Jay Baruchel, but it's not looking so great.
Yeah,
right
it's
now.
Not looking great. So Emma successfully gets the invite back to the target's room. So Rue and Luke head there to do some recon and plan the exit strategy. We go to Boro to see that he has abducted the missing scientist as suspected. Luke has to listen to his daughter do some further seduction as the team tries to access the data that she is mining, but eventually they find that the files aren't there, so Emma has to break into a physical safe to get the hard copy of the research.
When Alden is trying to figure out if Nick's gay
that was a very good scene. He like very quickly he turns around. He's like, maybe I still have a shot at this. He turns around. He like makes eyes at the guy, and the guy ignores him. And he's like, nope, it's a lost cause. He's straight. and they're like, how do you know he's straight just by looking at it? And he's like, well, because he didn't want any of this. Come on.
Exactly.
That was the shock and awe line. I thought was really funny too. Emma pulls the full honeypot and breaks into the safe, but as soon as she gets the research, the target wakes up and points a gun at her head, and that is the end of episode 3.
Any idea what that emo rock song was? Because I was curious, but I didn't have time to look it up because it sounded like 90s. Like,
yeah, that was God. Who was that? It's not Bush. It's a song I've heard a bunch. Yeah,
sound like Stone Temple Pilots or Bush or
not
something like that.
Yeah, it's more Bush into like
not Oasis, but like something more like Bush.
Right? Gavin Rosdale solo work,
or like that Space Hog song that was in the Guardians trailer.
It wasn't.
I don't remember.
Okay. Anyway, and then she breaks into the safe by using her lipstick thing. But they just said that they can't leave any evidence behind. So that's what I didn't get.
That's
so
true.
Basically, breaking into the safe's fucking done because she breaks a huge hole into it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I did not catch that.
I believe they didn't want to go in there all gung-ho because then he would immediately know and everybody would immediately know. And then they would get the word out and then, Bolo or whatever the fuck his name is.
Yeah.
We'll get word of it and change stuff. So if they just did that for the safe and took the stuff and like put it back on there and closed the door, who knows when he's going to go in there?
I guess that's fair.
In the morning.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a few weeks.
The only thing is they make a big deal about how they can't just knock him out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't see a huge difference. Like, if you knock him out, you can just tell him he fell asleep. I don't know. They were both drunk, I'm sure. I don't know. Yeah, but
I don't know.
But yeah, I guess that kind of makes sense. Is that if you put the fake wall back, it's like how long until he actually goes into that safe? It's at least a few days.
And if it even was a fake wall, it just like she knocked.
Yeah, she said it was like a false.
Did she?
What do you call it? Yeah, it was a false wall. It's how she found the safe.
I'm talking about the hole she cuts in the safe.
No. I know, but I'm just saying if you close the safe and put the wall back, it's like when's the next time he's going to use the safe? So yeah, that makes enough sense.
Before we get going with episode 4, so this one, credits again. This one was directed by Stephen A. Adelson, who has a bunch of director credits for shows that are based on movies. Like, he has 12 Monkeys, The Exorcist, Training Day, Limitless. So that's the director of this episode, Stephen A. Adelson. And then it was written by Penny Cox, who wrote a couple episodes of Reacher, as well as wrote episodes of the Scream TV show that was on MTV, and then a couple episodes of Vampire Diaries. Yep, that's it. Okay, let's get into episode 4 now.
Cool. Let's see. Yeah, so we're into episode 4. She's got a gun to her head. Emma very skillfully talks her way out of getting shot and casually walks out the front door as Luke rampages onto the scene to try to save her.
He feels a little run down. Which
Yep, that's an Arnold line.
After running the security guard over.
There was a good one in episode 1 and I forgot to write it down. I don't know. Alden flirts with Emma some more on the way home as Rue gives Barry more romantic advice about Tina. Luke has a heart-to-heart with Emma regarding mutual respect moving forward between the two of them, and kind of regarding guilt over cheating on their partners, ending with... Basically, the conversation ends with Emma deciding that she may have to break up with Jay Baruchel. When the two of them get home, Jay Baruchel proposes to Emma, and she immediately says yes.
I wonder if those rules that he told Emma about cheating on his wife were like Arnold's personal rules.
Of course they were. Like, of course they were.
That he brought to the production. He's like, okay. He's like, what is this? No, you that's cannot give presents.
That's why that's so much better written than the rest of the show. So anyway, they go home. He proposes to Emma and she says yes.
I seriously thought he might be a secret agent after this just because I was like, just because the character's trying so fucking hard. I was like, okay, really? Wait. I kind of thought like, I was like, because I'm waiting for like a twist. Still.
Yeah, I am also waiting for a twist, so it's possible. But
so I was trying to figure out who it is, and I was like, okay, like yeah. I feel like it might be Jay Baruchel just because he's not connected to anything else.
I have a suspicion it might be Tina.
Tina? Okay.
Yeah, I could be. I'm less convinced of that after the first two episodes, but I still, it might be.
Who's Tina?
NSA agent.
The guy that the lady Barry wants to go out with.
Is this going
to
turn into a what's that? The fucking raw deal where you're like, I don't know anybody's fucking name. Which I didn't until I looked it up. Like, I didn't know her name was Tina. I had to look up Alden's name. Mm-hmm. And
to look up Alden's name. They say Rue way more than they say Alden.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's why I guess I was confused, but I zoned out there for a second. So you're saying Tina might be a secret CIA agent, but.
No, like a double agent.
Aaron specifically said he suspected Jay Baruchel might be a spy because
I got that.
Suspects a twist. I said the first two episodes, I kind of thought Tina was going to be the plant and that she was going to betray them in the end and she was getting at them through Barry. I'm less convinced of that after episodes 3 and 4, but it's still a possibility in my
mind.
Gotcha.
Okay. I thought you were saying like she's going to secretly work for the CIA. I'm like, what kind of fucking twist is that? No. I work for the NSA. I work for the CIA. Like, all
right. She's just like, she doesn't work for the NSA. She works for the FBI.
The worst twist ever.
And they're all like, all right, does that change anything?
That's how I actually work for the FBI. And then like, and then the season ends. That's their season cliffhanger. You're like, what does that mean? Oh, there's going to be a lot of paperwork now. So no one, Joe? Like, you're like, nah, everyone's straightforward.
I haven't thought about it.
He does not suspect a spy.
I was
now I'm going to be expecting a twist, and then when it happens, I'm going to be like, oh, you fucking assholes.
I mean, we could be wrong.
The only other person I was expecting was Donnie, but I was, it kind of like went away like after. No.
He's too much of a goober. We cut to Luke and Jay Baruchel out at sea on Luke's yacht debating the idea of asking for a father's blessing, which the conversation essentially concludes with Luke having a sort of begrudging respect for Baruchel.
Okay, so Joe, did you ask for Laura's dad's blessing when you got married?
No. And also blessing is different than permission. But no, they
Wait, what did he say? Did he say permission or blessing?
No, I think he said blessing. But it's usually implied that that means permission on the dad's part.
Okay. And yeah, ask the mom and dad if you're going to ask both of them.
That's true.
Nah, well,
if you're going to ask for blessing, you should ask for both.
Considering the women, like your wife's thing, what's the point in asking the other woman's thing? Like, you know?
Sorry. This is me joking, by the way. Like, this isn't serious. This is me joking.
But sure. All right, I can see your fingers crossed.
I respect Erica so much that I didn't ask anybody.
But no, they shit, I got the ring from her mom.
Like you stole it?
Yes.
Yeah, off her finger. Yoink. After I fucking elbowed her back in the head. Good thing she doesn't listen to this podcast because she doesn't know who did that.
Also, she has brain damage now.
So she forgets easy.
But no, you didn't ask.
No, I mean, obviously they knew and they were cool with it, else they wouldn't have given me the ring to give to Laura.
Wait, so did you ask for the ring?
I don't exactly remember how this whole thing came up. This was 9 years ago?
Yeah.
So I don't know how it came up, but yeah, it was Laura's grandma or great-grandma or somebody's ring.
Okay.
She probably know that. Yeah, but her mom gave it to me to give to her. So
okay.
Yeah, you don't have to ask for fucking permission or anything, you know? It's not like you're going to get a fucking dowry. And also,
if you were going to get a dowry, would you then be into asking permission?
Wait, what's a dowry?
It's the thing you get when you marry a lady.
Yeah.
Wait, like you get your virginity medieval back? Or? Dowry? What's a dowry?
In medieval times, if you were going to marry a lady, you got stuff with it. You got like presents.
Yeah. Like a couple of cows.
Well, I mean, I guess you get that now.
You got a pig and some money or like some land or something from her parents.
Yeah.
Damn, that would be sweet. Would you rather have the presents that you got, Joe, or some land?
I'd have some land. I don't even know if we got presents.
Okay, but how much livestock did you get at the wedding?
No, zero.
It's bullshit.
Yeah. No, my dowry was supposed to be a signed Bo Jackson baseball that Laura got when she was like 6. Damn. I still haven't gotten it.
Yo, you better start getting her parents to listen to the podcast. That way they remember to give you that Bo Jackson
fucking God, I hope baseball. They don't listen to this. They're completely different of me. But yeah, also, whoever walks them down the aisle, not gives them away, because that's another like old... Yeah. Or patriotic, whatever that word is. Thing. Patriarchal. You know? Yeah.
It's both. It's misogynistic and patriarchal.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you want your parents to be cool with it, but you don't need like their permission. Basically, you handle it like Jay Baruchel did.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep. You'd marry her regardless.
Hey, Erica, do you think I'd have to ask your dad for permission? If he... Her response was, I don't know, my dad's old.
Okay.
Wait, so
that's a yes.
So yeah, that would be a yes, right? Like, yeah, see, like I wouldn't even think, it wouldn't have been something that I would have thought about until like stuff like this pops up where I'm like, okay, well, maybe I should ask.
The only time I've ever heard of it is in fucking TV and movies.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Real people don't do this shit.
But also, it's whatever the girl wants, you know, your girl wants, or your boy.
That's true. If she wants that, but she would probably tell you that.
Yeah.
Anyway. Go ahead.
Anyway, next we see Boro wooing the missing scientist to get a new bomb out of him. And the scientist tells him that a mini nuclear reactor is needed. So Boro sets out to find one.
But he says it's not something you can just find on the street. It's like, dude, you're talking to a terrorist.
Yeah. Also, like, that's a pretty good comeback. He's like, I found you on the fucking street.
Exactly. He's like, he's just been like, you realize I'm a terrorist, right? Like, that's what I do.
Yeah.
I had a thing that I was supposed to mention. Wait. Okay. Oh, yeah. So it was when, it was when he was talking to Carter on the boat. I was like, okay, when he's like, it's not a boat, it's a ship, by the way. It's not a boat, it's a ship.
Yeah. Well, you said that like 80 times now.
Exactly. Okay.
And by the way, I haven't called it a boat. I've called it a yacht.
It's true.
There should be a drinking game for the show consisting of the lines, it's not a boat, it's a ship. And that's it and that's all.
Yeah, that's it and that's all.
And then the next one is I got them written down.
Oh, okay.
So the briefing scene, anytime there's a briefing scene, you take a drink.
True.
Anytime Barry makes a nerdy reference, take a drink. Oh, that's another one that I'm going to throw in there.
Oh, God. You'd be smashed by the end of episode one.
But the briefing scene, you're like, oh, drink until the briefing scene ends.
Yeah, that's like a chug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We go back to Emma's engagement party with the whole team undercover. Baruchel meets the team, including a very aggressive Alden. Tally reveals that she quit her job, so Luke jumps on the opportunity and hires her to work at his fitness equipment business, which is like his cover story. Rue tries to help Barry cozy up to Tina by basically giving him pickup artist advice. Meanwhile, Emma tries to jump Jay Baruchel, partially to keep him away from all the spies, but also to try desperately to find something she likes about
it. And she tells him the line.
Which line?
Like in I can't remember.
I'll be which back.
No, yes, that line. Oh, but okay. In the line that Alden tells her in...
Oh, yeah. Was it Swahili?
Swahili or something like that. Yeah, but she says the same line, which he says that he doesn't ever mean.
Yeah.
So yes, she says it to him, which I didn't catch until the second time I watched this. And I was like, oh, so I'm assuming that, which I'm like, I'm still rooting for Jay Baruchel just because I wanted to like not turn out the way. Like,
I just wanted to surprise me in some way.
Yeah. But like it's they're pushing it to where it just kind of seems like she's not into him.
Yeah, she clearly. Let's see. Then we cut to a therapy session where Luke and Emma role play each other as puppets. And despite how stupid it is, I fucking love it.
Every single time. There's like, I love puppets for some reason. Like puppet humor is just funny to me. As far as
puppets are funny, the Arnold puppet is especially funny.
The Arnold, he's got just the voice,
gigantic chin and forehead. Yeah, she's doing the voice too, but like I don't know, the chin gets me. I don't know why.
Yeah, he Arnold doing her voice and
his is also voice, very,
and
very
her funny. Doing Arnold's voice in her voice. I don't know. There's just
muscles.
And the great thing is how it starts off to where therapist, who is Scott Thompson, I think,
mm-hmm.
The therapist introduces it, and Emma's like, we're not going to do this. This is stupid. And then you hear Arnold like breaking with her.
Arnold
like,
immediately does it. Yeah. It's great. He has been desperate to do this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, by the way, this is, which we're going to end up talking about in the next episode, but this is... one of the things that some of the reviews had a problem with, which was this puppet scene, which I was like, what are you talking about?
This is great. What are you talking about? The therapy scenes, this is my favorite one and the only one that like played as actually funny.
Oh, yeah. So in the next episode, we're going to look back at, like, I want to look back at some of the reviews and like see what the critics had problems with as opposed to like what we.
Yeah.
Like,
after we finish the series.
Yeah.
The therapy session ends because there's another mission briefing where the team plans to set up a fake sale of the mini reactor that Boro needs to trap him. They decide to use a black market dealer nicknamed the Great Dane, who Rue hates because he accidentally shot off her toe.
Which was a good call not showing the toe, I think.
Yeah, but also, I don't know, that joke didn't really land for me because it's like... I don't know. It's a missing toe. How gross could it be? And everybody's playing it up. It's like it's the most disgusting thing in the world. I don't know.
Look up gross toe in Google.
No. There's a difference between a toe with necrotizing fasciitis and fucking just a missing toe. That's not the same fucking thing.
True.
Well, no, it wasn't that. It was there was a nail growing out of the stump.
Sure. How is that different than a toe? What is a toe but a stump?
Maybe no, it's supposed to be like a big nail, right?
Yeah,
it's
so it was
to be a
like
toenail size.
Yeah, but it was like a nail just coming, like if you had like a nail coming out of the side of your hand or something, that'd be pretty gross. That's kind of what
weird.
It looked like.
Just, yeah, all right, that just didn't land for me. But anyway, back at Luke's fitness storefront, Tally meets two dickheads who raise suspicions about Arnold's legitimacy in the fitness world. We are at CIA HQ. We find out that the Dane is in the middle of a prison sentence, so somebody will have to take his place for a night while the fake deal takes place. Barry volunteers to impress Tina. At the end of the meeting, Luke confronts Alden about how he acted at the engagement party and kind of accuses him of trying to get with Emma. On the way to the prison, Tally calls Luke to talk about her suspicions, and he does not do a great job of reassuring her.
Oh, the team is on a plane. Another drink.
Yeah, that's true. It. A plane ride.
There's a plane ride. Take a drink.
Barry gets cold feet, but is forced to go anyway, and the Dane is successfully broken out of his cell. And this is like one of the few notes I took, like I bothered to take on the during my summary, which is, I just want to note that when Barry breaks into the cell, he like uses his like secret spy acid to dissolve the molding around a particular brick to break into the cell. He pushes the brick out of the wall onto the Dane's pillow on his bed without having any idea that the Dane's head would not be there. For all he know, he was pushing that brick. Like, he didn't know where he was pushing the brick, but that brick absolutely could have landed right on his fucking head.
It might not have killed him.
It might not have, but it probably wouldn't make for a great mission.
Yeah.
I just think that's a thing I noticed that I thought was funny.
One of the reviews I was reading was basically saying that this dude who plays the Dane did a cameo. Do either of you know who he is?
I don't know who he is. I like him. He's funny.
Yeah, but like, he's funny. Like, I don't have a problem with him. I was just curious. Like, I was like, wait. Because they, I think it was like the, whoever does the reviews on Roger Ebert's website now, said that it was like a cameo or a guest appearance or something like that. I'm like, wait, who?
What's his name?
His name is Adam Pally or Polly.
Oh, I've heard of Adam
Pally. P-A-L-L-Y.
I've heard of Adam Pally. He's like a comedian. He might have a podcast. I don't know.
But yeah. Like... he's like Gary the cameraman in Iron Man 3.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. It was weird because I was like, wait, I've never.
Or maybe he's a writer. I don't remember. Anyway, like I've heard the name before, but I don't know why that's a cameo.
Oh, yeah. He was in Sonic.
Yeah, but was he the deputy? Wade? He says Wade.
Yeah. Yeah, he was the other cop that worked with James Marsden.
Okay. So they break the Dane out of his cell. Luke and the Dane get Dark Knighted off the prison roof as Barry does his job by pushing a meal tray through a door and has a nice conversation with Tina. Luke promises to keep the Dane out of prison if he helps him with Boro, which he gladly agrees to so that he can see his wife and child. Back in America, Tally begins looking into Luke's past fitness sales, which kind of alerts the CIA that Luke is making terrible decisions by hiring his ex-wife. Boro takes the bait, sets up a meeting with the Dane as Barry continues to connect with Tina. Luke and Emma argue a little bit more about Jay Baruchel while loading up the reactor when suddenly their car and the reactor is stolen. Luke forces the Dane to call Boro and postpone the meeting, but he only gets them 30 extra minutes. So Luke decides to scrub the mission and put the Dane back in prison, but the Dane runs for it after hearing this, leaving Barry and the mission screwed. And that is where episode 4 ends, and that is where the summary for today ends.
Okay. Which I already mentioned to Chris again, because he pretty much had to explain the last part of it to me because I didn't watch the last 15 minutes. I mean, I did last night, but I was trying to write notes.
He didn't do it the second time.
Yeah. So the last scene ends and he writes on the mirror.
Basically, he's in the bathroom. And when they go to tell him that they have to take him back to prison, he's already gone and out the window. And on the mirror, he leaves a message, which is, you changed the deal.
He writes on the mirror because apparently the audience is too stupid to figure out what happened. Again, it's the problems that I have with the show. It treats the audience like a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Anything to mention before? I have like two notes.
All right, I guess I'll start. As far as this show goes, I am enjoying it very much. Like, I think the comedic acting is done well. I think like the story and everything and just kind of the absurdist, I guess, almost satire of kind of spy stuff is very well. I think the people are funny. I don't think a lot of what they're saying is funny.
Like,
but that doesn't...
Like the dad jokes or...
No, the dad jokes are great.
So like, what do you mean as far as like what they're saying?
I totally agree with that.
I don't know. They say stuff in funny ways, but there's no like joke to it, you know, and it's supposed to be a joke, but there's not a joke, but it's said like a joke.
Okay. Is it... Sorry, I'm curious. I'm not playing stupid. I'm actually being stupid. Like, is it like the stuff? Because like the only stuff that I don't find super funny, like I'm enjoying the show so far. Like I said, the only stuff that I don't find super funny is the references from Barry about like just references to old movies. Where I'm like, okay, that's not really funny anymore. Just that's the stuff that I don't find funny. But
I tend to agree with Joe. I think the show is trying to be funny. Like the show thinks 75 to 85% of its lines are funny.
Okay.
And I think that the performances make about 60% of the lines funny. And it's just like the thing, like he said, the things that it's presenting are jokes are not, either they're not jokes or they're just not as funny as they think they are. And it's really the performance is selling it more than anything else.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to have to get a, try to think of examples for the next episode.
Yeah. For the next episode, I will write down actual examples where okay, I'm like, cool. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But that's anyway. My homework.
Okay. Mr. Yeah. Frescus. Just I'm just curious. Sorry, I'm not trying to
Professor Frescus.
I'm actually curious, just because like I'm curious what instances you guys mean, because like mm-hmm. I'm sure I might have noticed it, but I can't think of stuff like specific examples.
I feel like Rue says a lot of that, and she does a lot of that.
Yeah.
So she was like some toe stuff. Just off the top of my head.
Yes. Yeah. But that stuff I didn't really find funny, but a lot of her jokes I'm. Like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, she has a lot of jokes, but yeah. There's just, especially with her and Alden, a lot of the stuff that they say is set up like it's a joke, but yeah. There's not a joke there, which I'm not saying is a problem, but like, you know, the show would be in the next stratosphere if, you know, those jokes were actually funny. Mm. And, you know, you guys mentioned the dialogue, and I guess some of it's forced. Like, I'm not, you know, it's not the fucking Wire or some shit, but overall I'm just really enjoying the show. It's glad to see Arnold. Like, this is the best thing he's had to work with in what, like 20 years. I can't think of anything that's
I remember not minding The Last Stand, but we on rewatch
also. Yeah, there's some other stuff I haven't watched. Like, I haven't watched The Last Stand. I heard Killing Gunther is good, and I haven't seen it,
but still, like, well, from what we've seen, yes, The Last like 20
years. I would tend to agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is probably the best thing he's done in
10, 20 years. Yeah. It's, and you know, like he's still got it. He's not like the super charismatic, ripped action star like he was in the 80s and 90s, but like he still can lead a project and be entertaining and funny and, you know, just be fucking Arnold. So I'm enjoying that. It makes me very happy that this show is not a complete disaster. Some people might disagree. But you know what? I have a podcast about Arnold stuff, and I'm watching this, and I'm not like getting mad like I do with some of the other shit that he's in, or just being like, bleh, like I'm enjoying it. So you know what? Fuck off, critics. You can.
Oh, I thought he was going to say my name.
My balls.
Well, yeah, like with what you were saying, I can't remember what it was, but I had a point. Oh, sorry. Yes, I know what it was. It's, you said like he was trying to, like, he was doing the same thing that he used to do, but he. Updated, I wouldn't say updated it, but he's not trying to play the same type of role that he was in the early 90s when he was younger. He realizes that he's older now, which I know he already did with Terminator and all that, so he's okay with the aging thing, which is nice. He's not trying to still play the same like
consummate good guy, like knows everything and does everything great all the time.
Never fucks up. He still is in this, but like he's aged with it to where it's like it's still making fun of his age with it. Like
I think he's doing all this quite gracefully, and he knows when to make fun of himself. He knows, he knows what is funny about him being an old guy in an action thing.
Yes. That's, thank you.
Yeah. And I think to add on to your point, there we go. That's a smaller word I can use. Like, he's, especially in like his prime, you know, his character was like always right.
Yes.
You know, you're like, even if stuff didn't work out, which was always like, you know, the end of Act 2 or whatever, like he was always right and righteous and like doing what the audience, like we wanted him to do, you know, we're like, he's doing the right thing. And then this, he's, you know, he's kind of not, like, obviously stopping like terrorists and, you know, nuclear bombs and shit is right. But, you know, like when it comes to the like, you know, spying on, well, I guess, and he did that in True Lies too. That was bad.
Yeah. But they do establish in the first episode, like, yes, he tried to help Boro after he killed his dad, but he also created one of the most dangerous terrorists on the planet by doing so. Like, he paid for all his schooling and shit and, like, gave him an origin story, basically.
Yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, that shit comes back to haunt you sometimes. And he's not always right with Emma either. Like, he has to, like, every other episode he has to admit, like, I was wrong about that. So.
This show kind of made me wish that I was close to James Cameron so I could get his thoughts on it. But basically, because this is basically like a True Lies remake without being a remake. Like, not a remake, but
like a soft sequel.
Reboot. Yeah. Mostly because we've kind of already seen how protective he is about his IP. Mm-hmm. Even though he pretends not to be. So, like, I'm curious his thoughts on this just because he is so...
I wonder, like, how protective he is of True Lies. Like, do you know if he's,
like,
super...
I feel like he's like that with anything he does.
I totally agree, except the only...
Minus maybe Aliens.
The only thing reason I don't feel like he's that protective of True Lies is because that's already kind of a spy parody.
Yeah.
It's a well-done spy parody, but I don't think he... It does not reek to me of, like, a super original idea. And so,
yeah,
I don't know how, you know, protective he is over that. The basic idea of a spy parody.
This show, FUBAR is to True Lies what True Lies is to Raw Deal. took that idea, Raw Deal, undercover.
Oh, yeah.
Arnold, okay. Or some alphabet. I guess he was just in the police or whatever. Undercover. Yeah,
just a cop.
I think he wouldn't be, except for it's really close. Like,
it is super close. I totally get, but I think
that's the only reason for, like, I think he might not be. I don't know that. Like, yeah. I'm assuming the guy also can't keep his mouth shut. So I'm assuming eventually we're going to hear what he thinks about the show.
Also, I'm guessing. I don't know. I assume Arnold is like.
Oh, he's.
I know, like, they're cool, yeah, right?
They are close.
Like. So I assume Arnold would have at least mentioned it to him, and, like,
yeah,
he probably wasn't super pissed about it.
No, he probably pulled the same thing into a Terminator. Yeah, go ahead, do what you want to do. Like,
yeah,
no,
that's true.
Like, until he sees it and he's like, what the fuck is this? Like, the same thing he did with Genesis, to where he's like, he's like, no, when I meant go for it, I meant, like, do it the way that I want to do it. I didn't tell you how I want to do it, but I meant to do it the way I want to do it. But anyway,
just say what you mean, James Cameron. No, I mean, we might hear from him once he, like, swims his way up out of his giant pile of money he has at home, like Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah.
Like, you get lost in that shit pretty fast, so
it
takes a while to swim back up.
There's no way that someone's not going to eventually ask him about that, but so I'm curious to hear what he thinks about it. But also, my biggest problem with the show that, like, this far is that pretty much everything is explained through dialogue instead of shown, which,
yeah,
like,
there is a lot of dialogue and a lot of exposition.
The biggest example probably being that bar scene with Emma is attempting to seduce the dude. Like, you pretty much have the team in her ear pretty much explaining what's going on, as well as Alden reminding Emma, like, which I kind of mentioned before, that she has to be invited back to the guy's place after, and ask her asking why she has to, for some, like I said, this would have been better if she was a new agent.
Yeah,
that would explain that would make sense for all the, like, explanation for all the stuff that's going on.
Yep.
But that's pretty much my only problem. Otherwise, I really, like, I'm enjoying the show a lot. Like, it's super fun. It's the cliffhanger thing is also fun because you're like, oh crap, now I gotta watch the next episode. It's not like oh crap, I gotta watch the next episode. Like, you're like, oh crap, I wanted to go to bed, I gotta watch the next episode. So and
it's not like Lost where it's like cliffhanger, loss, and then, like, three episodes later they finally get to it.
Yes.
Or just you have to wait another fucking week if it's, you know,
yeah,
like, this shit all came out at once, so that's nice.
But I'm actually really enjoying the episode. I like all the characters so far, and I didn't actually notice anything that I was like not even liking. It's just, like, stuff that I noticed that's writing stuff that could have been fixed, changed a little bit, which is the second time watching it. And it's just, like, little, like, nitpicky things with, like I mentioned, like, the Barry character and, like, making so many references to stuff, which I get. Yes, I get it. He's a nerd. It's all, again, trope stuff, to where it's, like, the Tina character, which I didn't even know her name. NSA girl, which I didn't know her name. Yeah. And just her quiet, like, it's, again, just that stuff, to where it's, like, little fixes, but also it doesn't really matter. It's fine. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually enjoying the show for now. Chris, how are you enjoying the show?
So I'm just, like, up top, I definitely have got some biases against this show. I am a bigger fan of movies than TV. I don't do well with TV. It always feels overly drawn out to me, or pretty much always, except for, like, the very best TV shows.
You've never even seen The Wire, so how do you know what the very best TV shows are?
Wait. What would you say?
TV shows plural.
What would you say what are you talking about as far as, like, the best TV shows?
I don't even know, man. I watch so little TV that I'm talking about,
like, Night Court?
I prefer sitcoms because I just, you know,
you can, like, watch and pick them up and drop them.
Exactly. I can just tune in or out whenever I want to. It's, you know, I watch a lot of animation, you know, it's kids shows technically, but like well-written kids shows, like Avatar The Last Airbender,
yeah,
and stuff like that. Simpsons, obviously, but stuff like that. I know that there are better shows out there, that there are good dramas out there. I just am not. Hour-long dramas are hard for me to sit through a lot of the time.
Okay.
Just fair it's enough. Just a preference thing. It's not even like it's not like they're bad. Every time I sit down and watch an episode of Breaking Bad, I get thoroughly sucked in and I know how good it is, but like I've never sat down and watched the whole show. I won't make it through. But anyway, the point is I know I have a bias going into the show. I don't prefer TV shows. I also really hate the binge model of TV shows.
Yes.
Where they expect you to watch everything one right after the other. I think that binge TV shows are manipulative. I think the cliffhanger thing that they do at the end of every episode is manipulative. I think it's bullshit. I think the episode should end basically 5 minutes later every episode. The beginning of every episode should be the end of the last episode. They're doing that just to
especially
fucking...
Especially because the payoff's never...
Yeah, the payoff's not that interesting. So, like...
So, yeah, you're talking... prequel Ridge Tridge and not like sequel trilogy, not fucking The Force Awakens,
yes,
where it ends on a fucking exactly. cliffhanger. It's not how Star Wars works, JJ Abrams.
It's where Luke throws the lightsaber.
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, no, that's where the second one starts. The first one, she gets to the island, and it's like,
well, she hands it to him.
Oh, that's right. She just hands it to him. I forgot.
Or she tries to hand
it. I don't even know if she hands it to him. I think she just stands there.
Yeah, she just holds it out and he turns around. He just turns around.
And the camera goes around and it's like Star Wars.
But anyway, I think the drop everything at once and expect you to binge the entire thing, the way they structure things when they do that actively makes shows worse. So there's a structural problem that I have with the show. Anyway, but for the most part, I'm pretty bored by this show. I think it's super paint by numbers, and I feel like I'm calling a lot of the stuff that's going to happen. Yeah. I hope to be surprised. I really do.
I'm the same way as far as I'm calling everything that's happening, but I'm still enjoying it. Like, it's still like, it's fun.
Yeah. Parts of it are fun. Other parts I find pretty boring. I don't find, like, the scene on the train with the magnet vest, I don't find that interesting. I just don't. Yeah. Like shit, I've seen shit like that before. And
you're like, I've seen it better in movies. This is why I watch movies.
I mean, yes, basically. But let's start off with the things I like. Good performances all around. Like, every character, I enjoy the performances, even when I don't like the writing. All the performances are really good. It makes me like the characters even when I don't think they're particularly well written. Arnold getting to be funny again and like very consistently being funny. I enjoy that.
Yes. Sorry, real quick. I just realized you're right. They're like, the characters are interesting, but there's no real like depth to any of the characters.
No, I don't. None of, I wouldn't care.
Except for Arnold's character.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like in his wife and his daughter, maybe.
I don't even think Tally is that deep. It's the relationship with Arnold that makes her interesting. That's it. Arnold, Emma, that's pretty much the only really complex, like, three-dimensional characters in the show. But again, I'm not talking about the bad stuff. I like the good performances of everybody. Arnold gets to be funny. Like I said earlier, Arnold repeatedly pronouncing cuckolding as cockholding. He does it for like two episodes in a row. He does it like 18 times, and it's hilarious every time. And that alone has made this show worth it for me. I do think that it's shot interestingly. Like, not all of it. A lot of it is shot, you know, pretty normally. But I think it's shot quite interestingly in certain parts. If you look at the opening scene, there's a lot of really good shooting in that. And some of the action stuff is pretty competent. It's not like the most unique action in the world, but it is competently shot. I know what's going on, and it's interesting some of the time. The other two lines that I really, the other two things I really fucking love is, first of all, just the puppet scene. Puppet Arnold hitting himself right after Emma was strangling the puppet is fucking, that's maybe my favorite thing in this entire show.
She made him hit himself?
Yeah. She is strangling the puppet. And then she starts making him hit himself in the head. It's really fucking funny. I don't know why. And then the last line, one of my favorite lines, just because of the way Arnold says it, is, your skinny malnourished body will squeeze through it like a cookie dough.
who was that?
Barry was afraid of jumping down the tube into the prison. Yeah. And he goes, why do I have to go instead of you? Why can't you go? And he's like, because your skinny malnourished body will squeeze through it like a cookie dough. I love it.
All right.
The things I don't like, everyone is way too quippy. There's no straight man in this show. No. There's just no straight man in this show. If you count Dot, the head of the CIA, as the straight man, you're wrong because she's barely in any scenes. Like, she's in the mission briefing scenes, and that's it.
I'm going to say you're wrong because she's a woman. You're a straight woman. But, okay.
It's got mediocre writing. Like, not terrible writing, but it's just mediocre. It's just, like, fine, average, basic writing.
It feels like they wrote the script and then had, like, it kind of feels like, which I'm kind of okay with because I'm digging the jokes, but it feels more like a comedy, but it feels like they had Fortune Feimster and somebody else go in there and punch it up. Like,
definitely.
With just jokes.
Punch the shit out of it because they were like, I think somebody was handed the script and was like, oh, this is not interesting enough. Let's just throw jokes in there all the time.
Which I'm enjoying. So I like that part of it, but yes, I get it. Yes, it is. Yeah. It is very quippy.
But yeah, that's what I was telling Laura. I was like, it's a comedy action. She's like, oh, so an action comedy? And I'm like, no,
it's a comedy.
It's a comedy action.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I am not a fan of like the procedural structure. It got old to me after like the second episode. It's like,
where they keep going back to the briefing room.
Exactly. And, like, it's every episode they come back from the mission.
Yeah.
They spend a little time character stuff. They go do a mission briefing. They spend a little more time with character stuff. Then they go to a different country to do the action stuff. It ends on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets very old to me very fast.
It's weird because it's like, it's kind of mixed up a little bit to where it's not exactly like procedural, to where it starts off like resetting. It's because it starts off on the cliffhanger. You get a little bit of the cliffhanger and then it goes into the procedural part. Like maybe like 10, 15 minutes into the episode, it resets.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. It resets and it goes back to,
Yeah. It's just,
but
you know.
It's still following like a storyline, but it's still like resetting every time.
Exactly. I understand that procedurals have their place, but they are not telling a procedural type story. They are trying to tell a bigger overarching story. The kind of story you would tell in a movie.
Yeah.
They're not doing CSI. They're doing one plot line. They're doing father and daughter fight while trying to stop a terrorist. That's a log line for a movie. That's not a fucking procedural TV show. And it gets fucking old. And that's pretty much it. Most of my problem is the writing. And I hope it surprises me. It's not that I'm completely not enjoying the show, but I think I'm enjoying it a lot less than you guys are.
Okay.
Well, that's just like your opinion, man.
That's true. It is entirely preference. It's not that this is not a fun show. I'm sure it's fine. And if you like TV, you'll probably enjoy this quite a bit.
And still, now I just want to question you on the TV shows you've seen all the way through and haven't.
Oh, like very few. Extremely few, actually.
I do agree with your I don't like that this was dropped all at once because it it takes away from watching. Part of the best thing about watching Lost, like Erica watched it different than I did. Watching Lost, the best thing about it was watching from week to week, because you're like, what the fuck? And then you have a whole week to think about it. Yep. That's why I really, really, really liked WandaVision, because it was the same exact way.
That is the only reason that Disney Plus shows can keep my attention, is because I have a week between each episode to like, I will think about it for a day or two. I can go do other stuff and I'm not just bombarded with it completely. And then I come back to it and I'm excited to watch it again.
Yes.
It's
yes.
Like, you know, so, and they're structured better. They're still cliffhangers, but they are not the same kind of cliffhangers you're getting in this show. And it's just better for me.
I think that's the problem that I had with the Hawkeye show, was it ended like this show. So the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, I don't really care about watching the next episode. I think if this show was week to week, I would have been like, it's okay to wait. Like, okay, well, whatever. Like, we wait an extra week. I can watch two episodes at once. It wasn't a show like how WandaVision was. I'm trying to think of what else was like that. I think Loki was kind of like that. There's not really any week to week shows anymore.
No, like WandaVision definitely did it the best. I say this, but I still haven't watched the newest season of Mandalorian. The Mandalorian but I did, was I did like that for that, the first two seasons of Mandalorian, where I was watching it every single week and I was excited for it.
There was another show that we were watching. Oh, the Only Murders in Building was Only Murders in the Building was like is like that.
I still haven't watched that.
That's a good show.
Yes, it is a good show, and that's week to week too. And that's another one where you're like, oh shit, especially because it's only a half hour. But yeah, like, it's another show to where you're like, oh man, I gotta watch that next episode. And it is weekly, so that's mm-hmm. another one that's good. That's good like that. But like, I don't think that you're right. Like, I don't think that this show would have been like that if it was week to week, just because I would have been like, oh, that's. Oh, well, she's fucked, but she's going to get out of it. Yes, you are right. The way that they end the show with the cliffhangers, it like, especially with that honeypot cliffhanger, yes, to where it ends, like to where she's got the gun aimed at her. I'm like, dude, like, you know, she's going to get out of it right away.
Exactly. You think that I think that our main character is going to die in the middle of the fucking season?
Yes.
You think that, like, I think that that's how this show's going to go?
It just, yes, just play the scene out.
Structure is different, but yeah. Yeah. That's what I don't like about it. Anyway.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this episode of See You at the Body, Richta. On the first four episodes of the show, FUBAR, tune in. I guess you don't tune in. I don't know. Fuck it. It's a podcast. Download or keep refreshing that feed, because the last four episodes or the next episode for the last four episodes of the show, FUBAR, is going to be coming out soon. So yep, we're trying to pump these out to get them to you. And not take the usual like 6 month process it takes to do this show. But yeah, other than that, I guess there's only really one thing left to say.
See you at the party, Richter!